Oh gosh.
Throwing everybody off because we're.
Everything's off. It's 3 weeks. It's Tuesday. It is 10 o'clock, however.
It is 10 o'clock.
We're somewhat predictable.
We're at the point in time and place.
Yeah, right. Okay. Good morning. It's August 24th, 2010, 10 a.m. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission at our almost regularly scheduled meeting. It's been almost 3 weeks since our last meeting, but every meeting we've had lately has had a very full agenda, and this is no exception. This is Kevin Kramer along with Tony Clark and Brian Kalk, all here in attendance today. Welcome to everybody and to anybody listening on the internet. I turn it over to my colleagues for any opening comments as well.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning and welcome, and I'm glad to report that North Dakota State University is back in session and looking forward to a good Bison football season.
And if that doesn't go well, they're still back in session. It'll be a wonderful academic year. But I'm with you in my hopes. That's one thing about before the season starts.
Hey, we're undefeated right now.
That's it, baby. Yep. There's all kinds of hope. Okay. With that, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. We'll go to the regular agenda. Okay. I move the commission adopt the formal hearing order to affirm the March 10th, 2010 decision to conditionally approve revision number 13 to surface coal mining permit number NAFK9601 held by the Falkirk Mining Company.
Second.
You will recall that this was a case that was before us for quite some time. In fact, it was on August 1st of 2008 that we first received the application from Falkirk for a proposed post-mine land use change to recreational use on 428 acres on the mine. The conditional approval of the revision was subject to the right, of course, of any person with an interest who is or may be adversely affected to request a formal hearing, and we did receive such a request from the Dakota Resource Council with respect to 86 of the 428 acres included in the land use change. They asserted that the land use for the 86 acres that were cropland prior to the mining should not be revised to recreation post-mining and should instead remain agricultural land use. And so we held the formal hearing, and DRC did, in fact, then intervene. Number of findings of fact, along with, of course, Falkirk, and along with the Reclamation Division of the Public Service Commission, the Department of Transportation, the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, and McLean County all testified or had representatives testify in support of the land use change. The director of the DOT, Francis Ziegler, testified. The director of Game and Fish, Mr. Terry Steinwan, and chairman of the McLean County Commission, Mr. Stephen Lee, all testified in support of the land change or the post-mine land use change. What was at issue specifically and why all of these entities were involved as well in the case of Mr. Ziegler with the DOT, they supported the land use change as a method by which they could satisfy what is known as their no-mow obligation, which is a result of federal regulations that require the mitigation of impacts to wetlands and natural wildlife habitat from highway construction. In response to opposition to creating no-mow acres within the highway rights-of-way, the DOT has sought to acquire lands in the vicinity of highways for mitigation acreage. And so they approached Falkirk, they being DOT, regarding possible acres, and Falkirk indicated that they did in fact have lands within the mine, which may be appropriate, I would say, after hearing the entire case and listening to all the testimony, that it is more than appropriate. It was absolutely fantastic that they did have this land that was adjacent to the Coal Lake Coulee, and they subsequently agreed to donate the lands to the state of North Dakota for the benefit of DOT. Terry Steinwan with Game and Fish testified in support, of course, of the land use change, indicating that a valuable and unique area of wildlife habitat will be managed for use and enjoyment by the public and will be a permanent asset to the local community and neighboring farmer producers. So the Game and Fish Department is actually the recipient or will be managing this recreational area. And Stephen Lee with the McLean County Commission testified in support, noting that the county had previously considered the matter as part of its zoning authority and had approved a land use change for the 86 acres in question from agriculture to recreational zone for primitive recreational use. And others testified as well, as I said, both from the Reclamation Division staff at the PSC and, of course, from of Falkirk Mining. The director of the Dakota Resource Council, Mark Treshock, also testified in opposition, saying that, that they have members in the area who farm and be interested in farming the land at issue, and that the issues raised by the DRC are germane to its purpose and mission. He indicated that to grant post-mining land use change from ag to recreation would violate what they believe is the intention of the Century Code relating to reclamation and mining, to restore the pre-mine productivity on lands used for ag purposes. His argument, in my mind, assumes an agricultural post-mine land use, and of course this is about it changing that post-mine land use. Basically, subsection 2 of the Century Code, section 38.14.1-24, requires that the mine permittee restore affected lands to a condition capable of supporting the uses which it was capable of supporting prior to any mining, or, and this is important, or higher or better uses approved by the commission under criteria established by regulation. Commission rules contain criteria for the approval of alternative post-mine land uses, but the term higher or better uses is not defined by law or rule, but rather recreational use is one of the land use categories specified under the administrative code, along with several other uses, such as commercial, industrial, residential, agriculture, and to include recreational. So it is one of those in the list, and none of them having, there's no hierarchy, if you will, in the in that list of higher or better. So neither the mining law or the rules set forth a priority for post-mining land use, but rather indicate that recreation is one of the 10 possible land uses that may be approved by the commission. Basically, the conclusions of law are such that we do, of course, have jurisdiction. Falkirk has satisfied all of the criteria under the code and other obligations imposed by law. One of the post-mine land uses is, in fact, recreation. Changing the post-mine land use on the 86 acres in question from cropland to recreational, in this instance, is appropriate and justified. And I might add that it's critical to the entire, we saw and heard in the testimony, it's critical to the entire block, the 400-plus acres, because these are not, without the 86, these are not contiguous acres. So the impact is much greater than just simply removing 86 acres from the 426 or whatever it is. It breaks up the entire lot. So it's very appropriate. It seems to me as well as that the mitigation, that which it mitigates, is far greater than the 86 acres as well. So in fact, in terms of cropland, there's actually a net gain and not a net loss. And so for all of those reasons, this order is appropriate.
It's always helpful to me to think of what the legislature could have said in statute when you interpret some of these things. And the legislature could have said in statute all sorts of things which clearly required the commission to have a post-mine ag use. In this case, they didn't. They gave some discretion to the commission to determine what the highest and best use of any individual property is. In this, I mean, it seems like it's not just a win-win. It's a win-win-win-win situation where you have multiple parties who are all better off because of this particular use and is entirely appropriate.
All in favor?
Aye. KC2, I move the commission issue an intent to award a contract to Dave Titus Excavating, Inc. to extinguish coal outcrop fires at numerous locations in Slope County using funds from the 2010 AML Coal Fire Suppression Grant. Earlier this summer, we received a special $25,000 grant from the Office of Surface Mining for coal outcrop fire suppression in western North Dakota, and you'll recall that for the past, really, number of years, we've had coal outcrop fires that were basically are the result of a range fire that that ignited some coal outcrop areas. The AML division solicited bids for construction services for the project that includes basically excavating and burying the lignite coal and then reshaping this and seeding of the affected areas. There was competitive sealed bidding. We only received 3 bids and they were opened today. And the low responsive bid came from Dave Titus Excavating, Inc. of Bismarck with a bid of $20,975. The other bids were about $4,000 more, $3,000 to $4,000 more. The staff estimate for the project was, of course, $25,000 because that's how much we had. Basically, and there are, I think, 7 different outcrop fires in Slope County. Is that right? You know, mostly on federal lands, grasslands, the Forest Service managed lands. And it's time to get to work and put the fires out.
All in favor?
Aye. KC3, I move the commission assess a proposed penalty for notice of violation number 1003 issued to the Coteau Properties Company and issue a notice of informal conference in the matter.
Second.
During a routine inspection on June 30th of this year, a Reclamation Division inspector checked the water discharge from a pond. Water from the pond was being pumped at a rate of about 1,100 gallons per minute through a poly pipe. Although the pond is located within the permit area, the discharge outlet was located about 60 feet beyond the boundary, and it was not equipped with an energy dissipator, and a small erosion feature was beginning to form at the discharge point. So an NOV was issued for failure to utilize energy dissipators and the discharge outlet as required, and for causing a minor disturbance outside of within the permit area. Upon the discovery, Coteau immediately stopped the pump and on the next day repaired the small erosion feature, completed the required remedial actions within the required abatement period, and the NOV was terminated on July 22nd. Coteau did request an informal conference, so that requires the commission to propose a civil penalty prior to the conference. The amount of the proposed penalty can be contested during the informal conference. We also must normally schedule but not hold an informal conference within 30 days of receipt. So the long and short of it is that the staff is proposing, and we're voting today, on a proposed penalty of $1,000, $250 for the seriousness of the violation, and $750 for negligence, as allowed by law. The informal conference is being scheduled for 1:30 on September 30th. 2010 here in the commission hearing room, and of course that will be supervised by an administrative law judge if it gets to that point.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Now I have three interesting ones. Not that the others aren't interesting, certainly, but we haven't had many intrastate gas pipeline sightings. In fact, I can only think of one that we cited after the fact. Maybe we've had one or two others, but they've been rare, put it that way. The next three are all related, so what I'll do is I'll make the first motion. I'll try to describe all three, and then we can maybe go from there. KC4, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent to shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a citing application to 6 weeks, and assess a filing fee of $12,000 in case number PU10553, Highland Operating LLC's proposed 4-inch natural gas liquids pipeline in McKenzie and Williams Counties, North Dakota.
Second.
This is a, as the motion says, a 10-mile 4-inch NGL pipeline. There is another one in KC5, which is the same exact length. It is a 6-inch NGL pipeline. It'll carry a little different liquids. It'll be in the same corridor. But if you read the letter of intent, there's no distinction between the two, and it wasn't until I noticed on the map itself that I noticed the distinction, which I'll get to. It's just different NGLs, basically, and then KC6 is a somewhat related pipeline. Okay. What this is this 4-inch line runs from Highland Partners has a processing plant up near Cartwright. All of this, by the way, is near Watford City, to give us some perspective, I suppose. They have that. It's 4 miles north and 8 miles east of Cartwright. And this line, these 10 miles, will terminate at their proposed rail terminal facility to the west of Trenton, North Dakota. So they're proposing a BNSF-run rail facility where they will take liquids via rail into the marketplace. This 4-inch line will basically carry gasolines. That's the distinction of the natural gas liquids in this case are what are considered the gasolines. There's a map attached, of course, that shows the line. And the entire project, this particular pipeline, is expected to or estimated to cost about $2.4 million. The other one, which will be in the next motion, is a 6-inch line, same corridor, pretty much the exact same route, but since route means something specifically to us, since it's 6 inches, it'll be about a $4 million project, and in this particular line will carry the propanes and butanes in the pipeline. So this is processed gas. The liquids go to one place, And then in the KC6, I'll describe that a little bit more. That's the actual natural gas itself. So everything seems to be in order. We'll await their permit application, at which time, of course, we'll determine that it, whether or not it is. At some point, it will be determined complete, and we'll have a hearing.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So KC5, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing the letter of intent and the citing application to 6 weeks, and assess a filing fee of $20,000 in case number PU10554, Highland Operating LLC's proposed 6-inch natural gas liquids pipeline in McKenzie County and Williams Counties of North Dakota.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. KC6, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a citing application to 6 weeks, and assess a filing fee of $17,000 in case number PU10555, Highland Operating LLC's proposed 8-inch natural gas pipeline in McKenzie County, North Dakota.
Second.
You'll notice, obviously, this is shorter. It also only includes one county. I hadn't actually caught that until my last motion, that this, while it's only 10 miles, the other two, they do, in fact, go from McKenzie to Williams County. So this is all in one county. This is the actually the natural gas, now the processed gas that will be piped, and then this 5.1 miles using 8-inch steel pipeline with a maximum allowable operating pressure of 1440 pounds per square inch. The main line originates again at the Highland Partners Natural Gas Processing Plant and will terminate at two places at Northern Borders Pipeline, about 5 miles north of Cartwright. I'm sorry, it terminates there, but then there's a lateral line which will extend off the main line and interconnect with to WBI's transmission pipeline. So this little line and this little processing facility will, by virtue of this 5.1 miles, have access to two of our larger interstate gas transmission lines. So kind of interesting to see. You might recall back, I don't know if we noticed this or not, I probably didn't have to, but WBI did announce back in May, at least to the trades, their intent to increase their capacity by about 33% out of the Bakken to try and take advantage of the processed gas opportunities in the Bakken. So WBI, of course, always has some extra interest to us since it's a North Dakota company right here in Bismarck, North Dakota. But kind of interesting. Now, along with all of these, of course, they're the company's requesting a consolidated process.
About the hearing you're talking about?
Yeah. So that while there are three different cases for us, there are three different filing fees, the intent of the company will be to file them as a consolidated case. Isn't that right, Pat? We would.
Each of them individually would be consolidating the corridor and
route. Right. Well, they are a little bit different, I know, but that's, I think that's their intent anyway, so we'll see.
Even if we could hold a series of hearings in the same two-day period.
Well, consolidation to me means doing it all while we're there. It doesn't necessarily mean
exact same hearing.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. If it was, it would be three different.
It looks like we'll be going to McKenzie County, though.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
And not Williams.
Not Williams. Yeah, might as well. It'd be silly to.
As the attorney looks over her glasses at us. I'm with you, Alana.
All in favor?
All right. That ends the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Clark.
Thank you. We have a number related to grain elevator licensing. It is that time of year when we go through the relicensing period for our grain elevators, and I'm sure over the next few weeks we'll have a statistical report out, as I look at Sue, to detail where we're at for this licensure year. So those of you in office pools, get ready for that exciting moment. Item TC1, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE10-513 granting the request of Technology Crops, Inc., Winston-Salem, North Carolina, to operate a 1,553,000 bushel grain warehouse at Pingree, North Dakota, effective immediately.
Second.
Technology Crops, Inc. filed a license application to operate this warehouse at Pingree. They established a receiving station in 2006 with the grain warehouseman that licensed the facility. The majority of the facilities at Pingree is used by TCI, and they are establishing their own license at this location.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I move the commission issue an order in case number GE10-512, granting the request of Columbia Grain International, Inc., Portland, Oregon, to operate a facility-based grain buyer at Crete and Oaks, North Dakota, effective August 16th, 2010.
Second.
Columbia filed applications to operate this warehouse, an existing warehouse at Crete and Oaks, under facility-based grain buyer licenses. The facilities were purchased from Crete Grain Company. Crete Grain will retain their grain warehouse licenses for physically disconnected facilities until a later date.
All in favor?
Aye. TC3, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE10-561, canceling warehouse license number 33 issued to Circle K Feed and Grain, Inc. at Glen Ullin, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Glen Ullin, North Dakota be discontinued effective immediately. This was one in which Circle K has sold the facility to Dakota Land Feeds, LLC. There are no outstanding storage obligations. In the next motion, we will be reissuing the license to, or issuing a new license to Dakota Feeds, LLC.
All in favor?
Aye. I move the commission issue an order in case number GE10-508, granting the request of Dakota Land Feeds, LLC of Huron, South Dakota, to operate a 107,000 bushel grain warehouse at Glen Ullin, North Dakota, effective immediately.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. TC 5. I move the commission issue an order in case number GE10-560, canceling the warehouse license number 1071. Issued to Dakota Midland Grain, LLC at Drake, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Drake, North Dakota is discontinued effective immediately. This facility is no longer needed and has been sold and will be licensed to Farmers Union Oil Company of Velva. There are no outstanding storage obligations at Drake.
All in favor?
Aye. I move the commission issue an order in case number GE10-514, granting the request of Farmers Union Oil Company of Velva to operate a 325,000 bushel grain warehouse at Drake, North Dakota, effective immediately.
All in favor?
Aye. TC7, formerly BK2, is I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for a hearing in the application of Montana Dakota Utilities Company for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct approximately 30 miles of 230 kV electric transmission line and associated facilities in Dickey and McIntosh counties of North Dakota, case number PU10-506. This is just a notice of opportunity. It is for the public, a certificate of public convenience and necessity, because it is an investor-owned utility that is constructing this line. It is a transmission line, but it will be owned and operated by Montana Dakota Utilities, and as such, a PCNN is required. This focuses not on the siting application standards, which relate to environmental and human impacts, but really more the financial and fiduciary responsibilities of an investor-owned utility and whether it's prudent to expand their facilities in such a way. It, I believe, is the what's become known as the Tatanka line, was the one that we had some discussions about yesterday at our siting hearing in Ashley for the CPV proposed wind farm. It's one that would potentially be tapped into not only by Tatanka, but perhaps by CPV Ashley.
You know, Tony, you used the word prudent when you were describing PC. Didn't I hear that?
I think so. Was that an inappropriate use of the word prudent?
I don't know. I'm so confused.
It's an extension of plant for which they will be encumbering assets, so I guess there is sort of a prudency test embedded in there, right? It's not an advanced determination of prudence.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
If that's the word you were looking for.
I'm just so confused, that's all. Commissioner Kolk.
Greetings. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the order approving an interconnection agreement amendment negotiated between North Dakota Telephone Company and Mid-Continent Communications, case number PU10309.
Second.
On June 25th of this last year, Mid-Continent filed a petition for approval of an interconnection agreement amendment with North Dakota Telephone Company. The agreement set forth rate terms and conditions under which North Dakota Telephone Company could provide interconnection services to New Rockford, North Dakota Exchange. Basically, this type of a request, we typically put it on our website for 90 days, and if we have no comments, we typically approve them. But in this case, the company wanted it shorter than 90 days, so we, on June 30th, we issued a notice opportunity for comment, which provided the commission would receive written comments no later than August 13th. No comments were received. The commission, we've reviewed this amendment agreement and find that it has not been shown to discriminate against the telecommunication carrier, and it also has not been shown to be inconsistent with our own public interest, convenience, and necessity.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Item BK2 was moved to TC7. There was basically a question on the PC, who does PCNNs and who does transmission. So
we get confused. I'm always confused by that, too.
We got it sorted out. For item BK3, I move the commission adopt the order prohibiting ARC operations in the investigation into Northern State Power Company's request to prohibit the operation of aggregators of retail customers, case number PU1059.
Second.
This one, I believe, is the first time the commission has weighed in on something like this. I'll try to give a little background. On March of this past year, NSP filed comments in a request for action prohibiting the operation of aggregators of retail customers, or ARCs. ARCs would aggregate retail customer load reductions and sell the resulting energy in the Midwest Independent Systems Operator, or our MISO, wholesale energy market. NSP stated that MISO's federal tariff filed to comply with Federal Energy Regulation Commission Order 719 would authorize ARCs to begin operations unless the Public Service Commissions took action to prohibit ARC operations. NSP contended that the operations of ARC may negatively impact customer rates, system reliability, and existing demand response programs. What was interesting to me was that NSP was the only of our groups that we regulate that filed this. But upon further review, the FERC order, if you will, says that unless you sell over 4 million megawatt hours, this wouldn't necessarily apply to you. So that's why it was just NSP. On May 12, 2010, the commission issued a notice opportunity for hearing, which gave until June 22nd for written comments or requests for hearing. The notice basically laid out whether the ARC operations would constitute resale of electricity by retail customers, which is prohibited under North Dakota Administrative Code, and whether the commission should prohibit or regulate the operations of ARCs, and if operations should be regulated, then how and to what extent. We did receive comments back from NSP, of course, that they did not want us to operate ARCs, as well as MDU did weigh in, thinking that it was also not a good idea for us to approve to let ARCs operate, if you will. So having considered this matter, the commission finds ARC operations involve electric service furnished by a public utility under established rate schedules being resold by a customer. By aggregating the demand response of retail customers and bidding that into the markets, ARCs essentially offer to resell the electricity associated with that demand response to other retail customers. Therefore, the commission issues the following. The commission orders ARC operations prohibited under North Dakota Admin Code unless the rate schedule under which the retail customers receives service specifically so provides. So what we want to do is that make sure that the companies themselves with us can set our own rate schedules to make sure we have good reliability. And we don't want to have where individual customers are working with third parties selling power back into the market.
Yeah, basically, for those who may be listening in and wondering what are these ARCs, you know, sort of in layman's terms, it's basically groups that go out and, as their name suggests, they try to aggregate customers who can provide demand-side resources, which means that can agree to install either energy efficiency measures or can respond to market conditions and draw down their power use at peak times and things like that. And then these ARCs aggregate that and sell it as an entity themselves into the market and capture the difference, basically, and that's how they make their money. And it's been something that is allowed in some parts of the country. It's something that potentially can decrease energy usage, which is a good thing, but there are potential downsides to them too, and this is really, I just think, a cautious approach to them. Doesn't say that we'll never ever have ARCs here. It just basically builds the record that until further notice, we're not going to allow them in until we could hold a full hearing if one petitioned us or wanted us to fully consider both the benefits and potential costs of ARCs operating in the state.
And what's in it for the rest of the customer or the utility? That just seems so hard to quantify to me. But anyway, that's why we're not allowing it.
It doesn't mean that the investor owns don't put in all kinds of good programs themselves. But they get filed in the rate schedules, and they do the right thing, and it's an integrated plan.
All right, all in favor?
We allow all customers
yeah.
the opportunity
from it, as opposed to just sort of cream skimming or cherry picking of the top ones.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That concludes the items in my portfolio.
Very good. We are without media representation today. The people are unarmed today. So, Scott, did you have a question? Okay, hearing no questions, then we'll recess for a few minutes while we sign orders. We'll come back in a few minutes to carry on with the administrative portion of the agenda. There are a few, maybe I should just give a couple of announcements because there are some things coming up. August 30th is probably the biggest one, is the hearing at the Tioga City Hall for the expansion of the Hess gas plant, which we'll be citing up there, and that's going to be at City Hall in Tioga on August 30th. Otherwise, everything's pretty much standard operating procedure. We don't have a lot between now and our next meeting, which is scheduled for September 8th, after which we'll have a few more citing hearings. We'll recess for a while.